Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Hello, everybody. Greg Bornstein here, your consciousness disruptor, cultural hypnotist, curator of experience, and chief looper. And welcome to your favorite late night talk show for the Shamelessly Fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Wow. Let's get right into it because I know that the world right now is... It ain't pretty. What's going on out there? And I even think my ability to reflect on the current world situation, my sigh of there's a lot going on out there, is less about the actual situation and more about the overwhelm to speak to you about my thoughts regarding it. Because I'm not here to take political sides. I think my stance is I hate politics. Yeah. Ugh. I mean, it's the way things work, but just the amount of bloodshed in the name of big ideals, it's, why are we still doing this? Haven't we learned how to talk to each other yet? I'm speaking for the collective humanity now about war in general. And I realize that's a cop. You want my political views? I know you do. You want them? Want me to dish them to you? $3 on Patreon every month, and I will tell you the true beliefs of Greg Bornstein. Okay, 1 cent. Can I get 1 cent on Patreon? Would that be worth it to you? No. Look, I just want to be out here talking about fun. Okay, sometimes not so fun things, because the darkness and the light have to go together, right? We have to go to both. And what's interesting is that I've really immersed myself in the past year or so in the work of Dr. John DeMartini, who is a really one of the top human development people. I've mentioned him several times on the show before. Some of my guests have. He is the creator of the Breakthrough Experience. He was in The Secret. And I've always liked talking to other DeMartini people on the show. I mean, Dr. Kim Yupst, one of the earliest episodes I did. Kelly Stewart. I believe Bruce Williams was a DeMartini facilitator. And my guest today, Jeremy Walker, combines the DeMartini method with hypnosis, which I found interesting because DeMartini's work, while it does tap into the unconscious and really speaks to values, which is something that I have very much, I'm very fascinated by and have wrapped my mind around a lot, the idea of finding your values, moving towards your values, which values fuel you, which values make you not as you're not as interested. It applies in sales, it applies in therapy, it applies in life. If people want to get a great introduction to DeMartini's work, I would pick up The Values Factor by John DeMartini, taking that perspective and then mixing it with The Power of the Unconscious Mind, that wonderful space of imagination and possibility, the thing that's helping you breathe that you don't have to think about. I am an unconscious, obsessed freak, in a lot of ways. I love it. Jeremy operates in there, and he doesn't just operate in this lofty, way that an airy kind of Aquarian thinker like me would want him to. I know. This interview, I don't think I trip him up too much. In a way, his calmness and his ability to speak to places in your mind that make you just go, oh yeah, he's right, took me out of the trance of needing to be like, yeah, but you do hypnotherapy. Have you ever made somebody hallucinate Mario from the Mario Brothers? And you'd go, Greg, what Mario did you think I was thinking of? And I'd say, oh, well, good point. Jeremy is very straight-laced, but he gets results with some of the hardest things possible. Alcohol addiction, drug addiction of any kind, including something that, I mean, food addiction, addictions in general. I mean, he deals with weight loss, but because he has his Walker addiction recovery process, WARP, he's going in for some of the hardest things to break. And combining that with values work, I thought was interesting, and interesting enough to have this intellectually stimulating conversation about personal development, change, and the power of the unconscious mind. You'll learn a lot. You will gain valuable perspectives on yourself that you hadn't considered. And if you want to see a therapist, hypnotherapist, or if you're a practitioner yourself of the healing arts, this will make you better. I really, again, straight-laced. I mean, he just talk straight, very direct, very soothing voice to listen to, pulls you right into trance. So I enjoyed having him on the show. I think you're going to enjoy it too. If you enjoy Open Loops, make sure you like and subscribe to it. The subscribe part is easy. Just click the subscribe or the follow button, if you will. But if you like it, just go to ratethispodcast.com/openloops and rate the show and leave a review. Even a few words will greatly help get this content out there in a time where brains, politics, are mixing, and war and destruction and all this stuff. Having peace, calm, resilience, and the ability to go inside yourself and feel all those things naturally is an important thing. So I felt it was important to start this month with Jeremy Walker. Here he is. Jeremy Walker, the man behind Inspire Hypnotherapy in Australia, very well trained, a lot of background in psychosomatic therapy, the DeMartini method, hypnotherapy, obviously, and the creator of a system called WARP, the Walker Addiction Removal Process for clearing addictions. We're going to go all into personal development, the subconscious, exploring the depths of power that I always promote about hypnotherapy, from Jeremy's perspective. So thank you so much, Jeremy, for coming on the show.
Ah, thank you for having me.
Yes. Did you? I don't know what it was like for you. I mean, I know that I indirectly, I feel, had a bug for personal development. I was recommended books early on, like, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and just a lot of there, The Art of Happiness, Dalai Lama. There was a lot of interesting stuff about mindset that intrigued me, but also hypnosis came into my life because of magic, because of stage hypnotists, and I'm a practicing magician. So the way that personal development met my desire for the magic of hypnosis certainly inspired me to create this podcast and inspired me to study it. I'm curious for you, how did personal development and/or hypnosis enter into your journey?
So I think for the first 20 years of my life, there was somewhat no development. I didn't really feel like I was emotionally developed, didn't know what I was doing with my mind, certainly no spiritual development. Around age 20, I'm sort of thinking, well, I do want to be happy in this life. And then went and discovered books and discovered how to actually operate my mind. The first book I read by a guy named Joseph Campbell, The Power of the Subconscious, was that one that really taught me, oh, my mind's all made up, or I'm believing a lot of things that are actually false and not serving me. So
Is
it was
that, wait, I want to
this.
get that correct. Is it, it's Joseph Murphy, right? Because Joseph Campbell's the story guy. I know,
Ah, my apologies.
no
Joseph
worries,
Murphy, yeah.
no worries, no worries, because I've seen that book before. I was like, Joseph Campbell never, I mean, Joseph Campbell did write about the subconscious, but not like Joseph Murphy did. Yeah, so you read Joseph Murphy's book, which is a great introduction, I think, to principles around hypnotherapy, and yeah, what were you saying you took away from it?
Yeah, so it was this idea of, hang on, my beliefs are made up. Many of my beliefs aren't working. So it was like, okay, I've got to go and start from scratch and develop a mind that actually works in the real world. Many of the beliefs we have, might be very useful. However, all of them are made up. That was a sense of freedom for myself. These beliefs came from somewhere. They weren't a personal choice. They were thrust upon me by just by life itself.
Now, is that hard for you? I mean, certainly some books for me, The Power of Now, really let me understand the way my mind worked in a way that I hadn't and still is with me to this day. Why do you think that message at that time was able to break through to you? Why do you think Joseph Murphy's work really settled in a way that perhaps other people's pieces of advice, oh, that's just a limited, because people always give us beliefs, right, Jeremy? People always say, oh, turn that smile upside down, all that stuff. Was there anything in particular from that understanding of the subconscious that resonated with you in a more profound way than other pieces of advice?
The main one for me was I was living under a weight of judgment, living under the weight of my own thoughts and self-criticism. And it was like, oh, all of that is not there, or it's something I can completely change. So it was like, oh, all these judgments I'd had upon myself for 20 odd years, oh, they're not real. How great is that? And oh my God, thank you.
And then what's the first step? I mean, you know that's a truth. What was the first step for you in terms of going in and reprogramming those beliefs?
So I don't think there was one profound or particular moment. It was ongoing over time.
Did you
Essentially,
take
anything that.
courses? Did you get into courses at all? Did you curious?
So upon about the time I was reading that book, I was reading about 100 or 200 books every year. So it was a
Oh,
lot of
wow.
self-learning. And then around 2009, 2010, I discovered, oh, these books are in 3D. I can go and learn these with around people. So then it was
Yes.
taking things from books in a whole new level, 7-day intensive programs where kind of recalibrating my own mind. And again, all around stuff that works rather than not works. I'm a really big problem solver. So if I'm seeing for myself and for other people, God, this thing's not working. Oh, well, there's got to be a way to turn that around. Surely this mind wasn't built to be a disaster all the time.
Wow. And did you immediately think, okay, I have to give this to other people? I mean, was there a moment where you really said, okay, I want to make this my life. I want to help others develop themselves.
I'd always wanted to do it, and it was just when a particular course, a quit smoking hypnotherapy course, also had a business plan, a sales and a marketing package that came along with it. Oh, I
Right.
can turn this into a business right now. And then my first year, I made $400. I'm like, that's not very much. Went to my accountant, told them I wanted to make $40,000 the next year. They kind of looked at me like I was a weirdo, so I fired them. And then the next year did make around 30,000, so pretty close to my $40,000 goal. And it just became adding more and more things that can get the mind working easier, quicker, without having to battle with ourselves, which is something I'd struggled with for so long.
Now, I want to ask you a quick question about this as someone that is a professional in the mind. You know, some people would go $400 to around 40,000. Well, you either have to have a really good system in place, which I'm sure you did as well, but some people would say you have to fix the mind. There's abundance blocks. If you don't overcome some limiting belief about money, whatever you have, you're really going to struggle to get there. What is your take on growing financially as it relates to mindset and specifically with what you even encountered?
Yeah, so for me personally, it was listening to a guy do a sales pitch for 45 minutes. And at pretty much the 22 minute, 30 second mark, I thought, I want to go and learn more from this guy. So it actually took 22 and a half minutes for me to see that this guy was providing value. And it made me think, if I'm not showing my potential customers the value they're going to be getting here, and I don't always have 22 and a half minutes to talk to people, then they're probably not going to come and get the help they really need.
So,
So in answering the question, it was
right.
like, I need to know the value that they're getting. So it was actually writing that out, writing out 100 benefits customers receive from me, and also 100 benefits of me receiving the money, which then eliminates the guilt and fear of being a salesperson.
Oh,
I'm
now
simply
that's
offering
very
a whole heap of
interesting.
value, and it's a value exchange. It's not a, here's something you don't want and it's going to cost you money. Here's something, and if you want it, here's the fair exchange. So there's no kind of nervousness around sales then.
That is, I mean, well, first of all, you gave me even a different answer than the question I was asking, though in a way it's a great answer, and an even I'm happy you answered the question that I didn't ask, which is like how can you feel better about being a salesperson? Because I think this applies to anything. I think this applies to if you're, I mean, I never thought about this. I'm thinking back to me auditioning after school. And what if I had done that exercise as an for acting? What if I had done that exercise as an actor, sat down and wrote 100 reasons why any audition I do, I am absolutely the actor that should be there for the role. How much more sure would I be as someone selling myself, as someone selling me as a storyteller? It could be a book you just wrote. It could be anything that you are offering as an exchange of value. I feel like that's an amazing tip. What I wanted to know specifically for you was, did you have the foresight to be able to do an exercise like that because of all the personal development stuff, and your problem-solving nature? Or did you ever encounter any blocks yourself that you said, I need to overcome?
It was exactly from doing all the personal development courses, all the personal development work. That was an exercise that went along with it. And it
So
was something
this,
that just
yeah,
made sense. Yeah.
that's
And
amazing.
rather than it being something that's based on a puffed up hype, it's just simply stating the truth. So it's not low self-esteem. It's not exaggerated self-esteem. I'm wonderful. It's just, here's the value. And it's like a, and it's reliable. It's based on truth rather than something that's kind of hyped up or a fad.
Yeah. Jeremy, in your work, do you think that imposter syndrome and these notions of self-confidence before you take on something. I'm curious if you think those are almost, like you mentioned, puffed up in a way. I think some people really do. I mean, some people would pay thousands of dollars to keep seeing a hypnotherapist to work on them before they get to the point where they believe they can be a competent lawyer. And I sometimes wonder, well, what if that lawyer just did an exercise like you just described? Would they need the time? Would they need the hypnotherapy? In your experience working with people one-on-one, what do you think of this imposter syndrome, as I put it in quotes?
Yeah, so it could just be that, again, the person's not owning their value. They might have beliefs that sales are bad, or I'm bad as a lawyer, or insert job, whatever I'm doing isn't providing a value to the world. And there's something I call confidence one and confidence two. Confidence one is, can I do this task? So I've made my bed hundreds of times. I've kissed a person 100 times. I've done therapy sessions hundreds of times. I know how to do this thing. Confidence two says, do I accept myself and do I have healthy self-esteem while doing that? So I could be wonderful at some of these things, but I don't actually like myself at a more fundamental level. So confidence two, I'd say, is like self-acceptance. Hey, yeah, my voice is okay, and I'm okay with my body and my personality and my sense of humor and all these kind of different things. That might be something that holds people back there as well.
Yeah.
So confidence one, hey, can I actually do this? Confidence two, am I comfortable poking my head out into the world where positive and negative things happen?
That's interesting. And in terms of your experience working with the mind, do you see different issues? And again, I actually don't even know your entire framework, so I guess I should take a step back and let me ask you this. In terms of the way the mind works, what does stop people? And absolutely feel free to get into the subconscious or the unconscious, however you prefer to call it. What does stop people from having either of those two confidences?
So confidence one, we'd say, is simpler. It's the, I've done this before, I have the skills, I've had the support, I know how to do it. Confidence two, what could stop people getting it? It could be a negative experience. It could be there was a terrible boss where the person was actually very good at their job. The boss or someone else in their workplace undermined them, or family undermined them, and their self-opinion, which is what I call self-esteem, became low self-opinion. Then they might drop into overgiving, people-pleasing, anxious giving. So kind of getting out of just that giving value and giving fair exchange into this other thing of, I'm now not worthy because of something that happened. And then we do the work in kind of regaining that self-acceptance and I'm okay. And even if my mind's telling me stories, I'm not okay. Hey, I've got to get back to that place and create those beliefs from scratch again. Hey, well, what's actually true here? I am okay.
Right. And do you see those things as reading between the lines? I'm going, it seems that you believe that a fundamental experience like that seeds itself into the unconscious. Is that how you view the way the mind works, or is it different?
It could be a good analogy. It gets kind of inserted or seeded into the mind. And then when we go to do the thing that's related to that, like let's say performing a job, doing some sales, the mind refers back to any intense experience and says, oh, I'm not okay. Or something's wrong, or I'm wrong. Yeah. So then the healing work is either with hypnosis or some other method, seeing this seeded idea or negative belief as something different than we originally perceived it, which could be that was actually the other person's fault. That teacher or that boss actually shouldn't have said that to me because it wasn't true. So again, coming back to truth can be a nice way to believe in ourselves again.
That's interesting, the idea of bringing truth to this. You've mentioned that word a few times here. I certainly think that
hypnosis, and especially when it comes to regression work and going back, the classic example being the idea of going back to the childhood incident, and then bringing this higher level awareness so you can see this other truth. See, so here's why I'm fascinated by your use of truth, because one could argue that, say you have the childhood trauma, you know, dad yells at you for doing something, you feel incompetent the rest of your life, you have imposter syndrome, can't become this lawyer or whatever professional it is. Then you bring this parent back, or yourself reparenting the kid, or this higher wisdom, and you say, oh, well, my dad was just doing the best for him at the time. One could argue that, sure, that might be a truth that is more helpful, but is that the truth? You know, it's just another perception. So when it comes to truth in hypnotherapy and the unconscious, what do you mean by that?
Let's say we had two perspectives. Dad yelled at me, now I'm scared to be this lawyer. I didn't get dad's approval. How am I going to get the approval of other men and executives and senior partners? And then we could add that second perspective. Well, dad was doing the best he could, or dad was trying to push me to be my best. We've only got maybe two parts of what could be 100 actual factors that were happening there. So we could say even exploring it in further detail, or just until the body has that relief moment or that release. So we say, or I say, healing until. I keep focusing on the work until I've got it. Because if, say, we did one session or two sessions, I feel a little bit better about myself. That's not the healing moment. The healing moment is tears. I'm so grateful. Oh, my God, I can't believe I understand this new thing about myself now. So healing until we get this transformation.
Yeah, no. I mean, this is... I wonder if hypnotists do stop too soon then. I sometimes think, and this is something that I've heard hypnotherapy trainers warn about, that the hypnotist mind reading the person, giving the prescription, telling them what the problem was, the willingness to work with someone until this truth is discovered. In some ways, I mean, it means you can't be a lazy hypnotist or a person that were change worker. But on the other hand, I'm also going, oh gosh, how do you do it so that does the unconscious know? Do you trust it? You know, I also wouldn't want you to keep working with people 400 sessions like Milton Erickson or something until you figured out, you know, the exact one thing till they cleared. But maybe that's how much you do it. I mean, how long does until go? And in order for you to make change work for people, do you have ways of zoning in on what that truth might be quicker?
There's a lot of questions there.
I know, I threw you a lot, but thank you.
And it's worth starting at a time frame. There was to do a comparison with kinesiology, a client I had seen for an alcoholism issue had mentioned they were told 10 sessions worth of kinesiology and they would be healed of this alcohol problem they had. And went ahead and did the 9th session, still wasn't feeling very good. And sure enough, after the 10th session, actually said, oh, I've got no cravings for alcohol. So it could be the belief that it was going to take 10 sessions. However, that could have been also the prescribed amount of time that this person, the professional, had recommended that it's going to take to do the healing work. In a lot of the sessions I do, it's somewhere between 1 to 4 sessions. So I'm a big believer in the unconscious mind that it can help a person to be their best self rather than being stuck in something that's not working. So probably one of the first things to do in any change work is have a look at what's the actual challenge. So if we were to have a look at an addiction and someone says, I want to change this thing. Is it actually about, say, wanting to be healthy? Or maybe it is about the money. Or maybe it's about, I'm just so sick of being controlled by this thing. I actually just want to feel normal again. So finding out, you could say the actual challenge and the true desire what the person really wants, more so than, oh yeah, I kind of want that. So getting to that, we could say deeper truth of the unconscious can be pretty useful.
Yeah. That it does sound pretty useful. I wonder, do you, this is interesting. When you work with people. Sorry.
I was just going to say, and as you're thinking that, a classic example could be if someone was drinking alcohol, quitting smoking, and if it's a lady, they find out they're pregnant, they throw it all in the bin for 9 or 10 months, and even while breastfeeding, let's say 12 months, virtually no cravings at all for most people. That happens about 87% of the time. So we wonder, where does addiction go as soon as someone finds something so meaningful like carrying a child?
Right.
So it's interesting that the mind just goes, nope, I don't have an addiction. I have a baby now. That doesn't happen, of course, in every case. Addiction can be complicated. But in many occasions, the brain switches off and makes a change automatically.
Jeremy, then I'm curious how you would proceed with people. Because I am very much someone that perhaps I give too much credit to the unconscious mind. I think that it knows a lot of things. I think it's pretty remarkable. I think it often knows why addictions happened in the first place. I mean, you hear these miracle stories. Now, it doesn't mean it's a silver bullet thing, but one of the foundational principles of a lot of hypnotherapeutic practices is that you can trust the unconscious. The unconscious will give you the key reason. It will give you the resources it needs to heal. But then you start bringing in stuff such as the DeMartini method, which, for people that don't know, John DeMartini, featured in The Secret, really, really keen on values, working with values work and balancing polarities and stuff like that. That feels to me a bit more, it's usually conscious work. I understand that doing the work of figuring out your values and balancing any polarities makes an impression in the unconscious, but when would you use something like that versus just trusting hypnotherapy and the unconscious to make the change?
I'm not quite sure how to answer that question exactly. All of my sessions involve like an increase of conscious awareness, because this can bring up potentially the real issue or a hidden secondary intention or beliefs or various other things. So getting like a moment of realization, in my opinion, can be really important. So doing the DeMartini method work, even and doing within the same hour and a half, and the hypnosis is something I do. So it could be that we'll stick with an addiction example. Person says, yep, I drink, it relaxes me, makes me feel confident, makes me fun, kind of a fun guy. But oh, I know I'm drinking too much, I'm waking up hungover, it's affecting my work. Oh, I just feel kind of heavy and tired. So we then say by doing, the DeMartini method, quite similar to my warp process, we're having a look at what's actually true and then finding something better. So we'd say, okay, you use alcohol to relax, to feel good, to have fun. But then they also reveal in the same moment, I'm then fighting with my partner, waking up hungover, I'm not feeling very good about myself. And the interesting thing is, the mind can get stuck on something that's not working. So people don't get addicted to things that work. We only get addicted to things that make us feel terrible. So one part of the mind is thinking alcohol makes me feel good, relaxed, and having fun. And if it's overused, which is important, the dose is important. If it's overused, the mind on the other side will then give us anxiety, depression, pain, hangovers to break our attachment to something that's not working. So having a realization of, oh my God, alcohol just is what it is.
Jeremy, you went on mute for a second. Sorry, you said, so having a realization of alcohol is what it is. Take it back from there.
Okay. Alcohol simply is what it is. there's nothing extra above that. We can't be addicted to that anymore. Oh, it's pain and pleasure together. In my own personal experience with sugar, I was way overusing sugar for pleasure and energy, but it was also causing me pain in the stomach, digestion problems, and I was fatigued. So I wouldn't then say this is a comfort food. This is a comfort and discomfort food together. And there's no way I can be addicted to balance. It's like being addicted to water. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So I can choose to have a couple of squares of chocolate, which is like me really lashing out, going wild, you know?
Right,
have
right.
Two or three squares of chocolate, but I'm not attached to it because I know it's going to cause me equal pain and pleasure. So then that can be useful. And then bringing that together with the hypnosis is the mind might already be thinking, of course I can release this. I don't need this thing because it's just simply a thing.
Yeah, it seems very powerful to work with both of those modalities together. And again, this is almost what I was pointing to with that example of the father yelling. I think oftentimes there can be a desire, or at least the pitch of hypnotherapy is replace these negative feelings with these positive feelings. And to a certain extent, sure, you can do stuff like that. And then I hear the Demartini side of things, which is, no, it's not about just replacing negative with positive. It's bringing balance so that things are, you have more choice. You can decide to like something and you can experience positive things, but also you don't have to. So it's intriguing to me is that bringing both of those together, working with balanced emotions, but also cementing it in a way, or at least it's almost as if I'm wondering what you're doing, Jeremy, is are you working with people in hypnotherapy to just release any baggage around people achieving balance in their emotions? Or is it something different?
I would say I'm looking to give people as many options as possible. So let's say if someone did have anxiety and their ways to deal with that at the moment might be relaxing, breathing, you know, even binging on food. So like using escape as well as mindfulness techniques together. By doing a walk process or a Demartini method, they can then rely on that at any time and kind of look back and go, okay, if I'm feeling anxious, it also means I care about something. So they could kind of have a new perspective they can think on at any time. But also the hypnosis can give them a new way to associate with whatever was causing them anxiety. They might automatically smile or have some other body-mind response after having hypnosis.
Yeah.
So I'm looking to give people heaps of options. Oh, whenever I think of this thing, I suddenly feel better. Or I can also do it consciously using the psychology type method. Oh, this thing isn't as bad as I think it is. So I'd say hypnosis can make us think or feel something, but also another method might help us just to release something something that doesn't need to be there or something that wasn't true anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. It almost makes me go, Why can't hypnotherapy do it all? I mean, in a sense that could you say, okay, I want you to go into trance and I want you to imagine now you believe that you've done the Demartini method on your beliefs. Your unconscious instantly is able to bring you 100 reasons why this behavior is serving you, and your unconscious knows it. And now your unconscious knows it. Let's bring it to the present. You know, does the unconscious need more support than just trusting it that much? Have you ever experimented with that? I'm curious.
And then in that example you gave, the first thing I thought is, if we ask the unconscious mind to think of 100 benefits to something that was difficult in life, that might tip off the unconscious to bring back the conscious mind to start thinking about those things. So I guess as you're aware with hypnosis, we don't want to tip off the unconscious that we're doing the change work. We want it to be an experience of change or transformation.
Yeah.
Whereas it's okay to also do some thinking work outside hypnosis.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm kind of wary as I'm doing a hypnosis session, if there's a trigger word or a trigger thing that might, ooh, that person suddenly alert consciously, maybe we don't want that too much within the hypnotherapy framework.
Right. Have you ever then, my question to that would be, what do you think is happening when, and maybe you've never done this, maybe this is too conscious, when someone does, this is a classic NLP pattern, that new behavior generator thing where they say, well, you have this behavior and your unconscious mind instantly can come up with three new options for doing something than you had before. Does the unconscious, does it have a certain amount it can get away with in your experience and keep the person in a hypnotic trance or whatever you want to call it? Or do you always think there's a bit of, is that too risky in your experience? Does that bring the conscious mind in a way you wouldn't want?
Not necessarily risky. However, the unconscious mind does do one thing that's pretty interesting. If we ask it to think of three things, it might only think of two. Oh, two's enough. So the unconscious mind does have a little bit of laziness in it, in that, oh, that's close enough. If we said five, it'd instantly think of four, and then it might think of the fifth, or it might not.
Yeah.
So it might go, okay, water, exercise. So the unconscious mind, I would say, does have a little bit of rebellion in it. So an opportunity for it to figure out the number on its own could be a way around that. Think of the number of ways you'd like to behave going forward. Or think of how many breaths you would like to take where you don't feel anxious. Is it one? Is it 15? Is it breathing consciously or breathing with purpose for many, many days to come throughout your entire life? So I'd say giving an option could be a way to get around that, rather than an exact number, which might be a bit too specific for the unconscious and also potentially limiting. Three ways, oh, what if the answer was four? What if four was like perfect for that person?
Yeah.
Like their house is number four, the numbers like their, four is like their spiritual number or their astrology number if they're into that sort of thing. And you think, oh, what's the exact right number for you? Then the mind would look for something a bit more non-specific, like, oh, what is right for me? How many ways do I need? Then the unconscious will fill that gap, because the unconscious likes to fill that gap with something, a bit more by its own choice rather than us directly.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I love
going. Hopefully that answers the question.
Trance. I love going in the trance of these shows. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. No, I think that's why people, it's not a science. There certainly is evidence-based ways of dealing with hypnosis, but it really is an art form, and the balance between doing the DeMartini work or some other more conscious process and then dealing with someone's unconscious really depends on the person in front of you. It really depends on what they're bringing to the table, where they are that day. And I imagine someone like you who has been working with people, specifically, I know that some of your key areas are around sexuality, food habits, anxiety, and relationships. You start to get a feel for how much of this kind of thing you have to do versus that. In terms of helping people shift rigid thinking about any of those things, sex, food habits, anxiety, and relationships, do you have a place you start when you first see someone about one of those topics? What is your, initial work when someone comes to you in the clinic for the first time?
Okay, well, let's look at food habits. That would be one of my top three specialties.
That's great. People always want to know that.
Yeah, so, okay, It could be keto, it could be fasting, it could be paleo, it could be the potato diet, it could be why you don't need to drink water. There are all different types of processes around food, which could work long term or could work short term. But I always ask people initially, hey, what's working for you or not working? And some people might say, well, this is working for me. I've been doing this for 10 years, but I've gained 20 kilos. So they might be telling me something's working, but actually it's not working at all. So initially, just kind of having a look at, oh, is the person already quite aware of what's working or not working? Or do we even have to do some work initially to go, well, it's worth considering trying something different? And I guess in
Right.
coming to a hypnotherapist, there usually is, hey, I'm going to try something different here. And to help get around the unconscious rebellion, I happen to be a thin man helping middle-aged men or women and older men or women to learn about food habits. They might think, oh,
Right.
he's probably always been skinny. Well, I'm going to reveal I have by fault or no fault or by design. That's just the way I am. So in order to get around that, we say this is actually a program of satisfaction. We're not trying to restrict chocolate or the bad foods. We're simply going to have a look at what's working versus not working in your highest values, which is what's most important to them. And if someone says it's, for example, family, oh, but I don't like eating healthy food and I don't like exercise, we can immediately bring in the question, how does you exercising with your family and eating healthy meals together help you as a family unit? Oh, well, my kids have ADHD and when they eat sugar, they're running wild. However, when we go for a bike ride and eat healthy, they're so much calmer. They're happy and they're playing together. So when there's a match like that, the unconscious mind goes, I'm definitely doing that. So sometimes you can get almost that perfect synergy of matching the goals. The person
Yeah.
wants to eat healthy. They sometimes like exercise, but sometimes they don't. But they definitely want their kids to be happy and healthy. So if they're suddenly eating better food and exercising a bit more together as a family, for this particular lady, it was like instant. Yep, I'm definitely going to do it.
Yeah. So you didn't need to, did you need to go into hypnotherapy with her to cement that or?
We still did the four hypnotherapy sessions. However, that was one moment in the initial stages where I thought, ah, we've got like an opening here. The unconscious mind and even is already going to be on board because it's just what she wants the most.
Yeah.
So we could say if, like I want back in the day when I was way overusing sugar, I wanted the chocolate, but also wanted to not feel like crap. So then I had to solve the problem of how do I get to feel really good, while still having pleasure in life and still being able to enjoy and still have satisfaction. So that's something I look to bring together through both, the hypnosis and the talk therapy is getting to that kind of place. Oh, I'm just feeling way better doing this new thing rather than this other thing that wasn't actually working very well.
Yeah. Do you find you have ways of getting do you have ways of facilitating those connections in a regular therapeutic conversation so that you're able to have a better experience journey into the unconscious? Do you try to do that, or is there a point where you go, okay, nah, I'm not going to get anything consciously, so we're just going to have to go right into hypnosis and get some answers.
Explore all avenues. Sometimes the person's conscious mind will be quite on guard, and you're not getting those unconscious moments like, oh, I wonder about if it could be this. Even just that, we're having there's like an unconscious searching for an answer there. So if that's not happening, hypnosis might be more focused on if the conscious work is a bit stressful or not getting anywhere for the client.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. I'm curious because this is something that people have told me over the years. They say, I'm afraid of someone working with me in hypnosis because there's some dark things inside of there. There's some things I'm not sure I'm willing to confront. I'm scared of that. In your experience, has anybody ever said that to you, and what do you do to combat that?
On some occasions, and there's a fear of, oh no, this person's going to find out something about me. So I then just bring us back to having that focus on healing. The focus is on actually getting better and releasing judgment, rather than this being like a judgment process of right or wrong, more like, hey, have an easier time in life. And if the person did have a particular fear, also acknowledge where the opposite is true. There must be a hidden excitement. As an example, I never get fearful about doing the washing up or vacuuming the house, but I also don't get excited about it. However, diving with a shark, going and getting therapy, there's like some nervousness and excitement together because it's actually important. So, in my opinion, going on a first date, getting married, getting therapy, working on yourself, there's nervousness and the thrill can happen simultaneously. So it can always be nice to flip fear into, oh, I'm actually excited and curious about this. I'm fearful of hypnotherapy because I haven't done it before. What if it's actually something I love? Well, I won't know until I do it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And you created this addiction protocol, Warp. When did that come into play?
So that came into play around 2016. I love my mentors, but I certainly didn't want to live in their own shadow. I wanted to make my own process and make it something that's right for the types of clients I see.
Right.
And and this process all about finding out, again, per person might come in, let's use this example again of food habits. They might be having and enjoying their ice cream and their fried foods and whatever it might be, but for some reason they've come to see me. But they also, we don't want to call that food bad or wrong because guilt reinforces an addiction or compulsion. And this is
Right.
where this process can be pretty useful, is actually releasing from the stress and guilt of certain habits to just being, oh, now I know why I did it. People have come to see me and they've had their habits for 30, 40 years, yet there was no awareness of, oh, I do it for stress release. I do it because it gave me a comfort feeling when I was a little girl, and then that's always been my comforter. There's one actually great example from the clinic. A lady said she kind of grew up in a bakery, 9, 10, 11 years old, parents were absent, and she said one day she looked around and there was all these croissants and butter and bread, and it was like her comfort for herself as a girl. Fast forward 25 years, she's got a couple of kids of her own. And the only time she eats now is when she is alone. So she previously used breads and foods to feel comfort from loneliness. Now it's reversed and is keeping her away from her family, does it in secret and feeling guilty. So we'd say the bread is just being used for something it's not designed to do. It's being used and overused, and then is actually you're feeling bad about it because you're avoiding your family.
Yeah.
So then, rather than focusing on something that's not working, bread, feeling heavy, gaining weight, feeling guilty, we say, oh, what about leaning into the family experience, which is what you actually want anyway? So we bring that attention to what's desired, satisfaction or connection or like real comfort, rather than like the false comfort or false enjoyment of an addiction.
Yeah. And you wrote a book about addiction too, Freedom from Addiction, A Hypnotherapist's Guide to Overcoming Addictions and Compulsions, which you can get off of your website, inspirehypnotherapy.com. It's also available on Amazon. What is are you going into all of that in the book? Are you talking about the Walker addiction removal process?
I've got one here. So yeah, I've got the Freedom from Addiction book here, and towards the back, around page 160. Oh, here's one of the interesting things here: 50 reasons that people have compulsions and addictions,
That is very
usually
interesting.
falling into one of two categories: either feeling pleasure, connection, comfort, gaining something, or on the opposite side, avoiding pain, avoiding stress, don't want to have to think, getting some me time. So we have that just before the warp process, and then I'll go to an example of one of the ones here. We have, yeah, the warp, actually a whole table filled out for eating chocolate. So someone can go ahead and find those top five reasons why I do it.
Yeah.
Find better ways to feel comfort, pleasure, etc. And then also seeing, and I'll spell it out as clearly as I can in the book, where it's causing the opposite. Like when I was using sugar for energy, but I was fatigued every day. And then this kind of brings it all together so we can go, oh, it's pain and pleasure, it's energy, and it's going to make me tired. Why would I bother? I've got to find a better way, or just something slightly different to truly feel better.
Yes, yes. What I think is also so interesting about addiction is that people are still... hypnosis is credited with stopping smoking, which clearly, I mean, you built your initial business off of that. But I still feel that it's underexposed in terms of breaking free of other sorts of addictions. I mean, people go to AA. It's the default thing. They go to Alcoholics Anonymous for their alcohol treatment. And various other addictions. I mean, that people do not seem to... And I think, you know, hypnosis obviously has a reputation. It's got the Hollywood stigma with it and stuff like that. But, I mean, this stuff is very powerful for big, big and really impactful addictions. Have you yourself worked with any alcoholism and found results?
I work with alcohol, probably the fourth thing I see people most for after food habits, quitting smoking and anxiety. Even a gentleman this year, he's now 10 months alcohol free. That was over four sessions.
Wow.
That had been there for 20 years on and off, big binge drinking for weeks, 2 weeks of nothing, would go again. It was even doing it at work. It had sort of reached that point of, okay, just completely overwhelmed and stressed by life. Would slow the mind down and drift off to sleep, and would oscillate between being really overwhelmed with emotions all the way down to drinking. I don't have to feel anything. And we did a few more sessions around anxiety because the mind was so overhyped and used to being overstimulated. We just kind of bring it back down to the middle. Oh, a little bit of worry is okay. That means I'm being effective at my job, or I care about my kids, but not letting it be there like all the time. So with via the hypnosis process, kind of getting that stop signal. Oh, I've worried enough today. Wouldn't that be an interesting thing? I've worried the appropriate amount of time rather than excessive worry. Yeah.
Yeah. The appropriate amount of time. That's really interesting. Yeah, people do not, people think it's...
And I'll briefly share.
Please, tell me.
Oh, no, I'll briefly share too on your example of Alcoholics Anonymous and even worry. People often say alcohol's bad, worry is bad. But that doesn't help us change it at all. It only reinforces it because we're labeling it as something bad instead of kind of understanding why was I even doing it. If alcohol is being used to escape pain and to try to feel better, it's worth acknowledging that intention, which is what I go into in the book, but then finding the better way. So rather than being stuck in the guilt paradigm, we're in the learning paradigm of what was my mind even looking for from alcohol? And I think that's a far more interesting thing to explore. Why am I worrying so much? Why am I drinking? Getting the answer and then finding a better way. I think that's better than saying, this is all bad. Well, then what does the person do? Nothing.
Yeah.
It doesn't change the cycle because there's no increase in awareness. So we want to get that more knowledge, more awareness. God, how is my mind doing this? There must be some kind of purpose behind it. But then again, we look for the better way, and that's where the healing work I do is.
Yeah. There's something more at this point, Jeremy, in your personal development that you're looking to explore beyond these modalities that you're doing. Yeah, I'm curious if there is some sort of effort to go even deeper in the personal development. Could it be done quicker? Are there more potential the generative properties of hypnotherapy? I'm curious in terms of your exploration, what is keeping you on the hook these days, if anything?
So that would actually be my writing. I went from a 10-year to 10 to 12-year learning binge, a few thousand books, 10, 20, 25 courses. But it's writing now. So my second book is on healing anxiety. That's an even bigger project than the addiction book. It's going to be twice the size. It's probably going to take 4 years total. So that's what keeps me on the hook. Through that process, I've discovered different anxieties I didn't even know about that were hiding. Realized that my anger that had formed in my relationships over the years has been based on anxiety. It's the same stuff. Anxiety, fear, anger, it all comes from basically the same place. So what's keeping me going at the moment is actually having the relationships that I truly want. To 700 days, about 2 years of my life has been spent angry in relationships, furious or arguing. That was just madness to me. So it's
Wow.
about actually going from twice a week fighting or arguing in my relationships over like a decade or two to, oh, we had a small argument that lasted 3 minutes once a month. And that's only come about in the last couple of years. So, yeah, getting more control over this mind, getting more awareness, actually being happy, and then putting that into a book and through my sessions, hopefully helping people to experience similar or even better.
Yeah. What would you say right now for somebody listening that's going, I've done a lot of personal development stuff, but I'm not even aware of the things that are holding me back right now. I don't know what direction to move next. Do you have any guidance so that they can actually start making the big impactful changes if they just have no idea where to start?
Oh, okay, so let's make it to a specific example. Let's say we've got your friend, or this person who wants to be a lawyer or is not feeling confident to be a lawyer. We'd say if it's a big decision, to think it through, make sure you have got the knowledge, you really want to do it, you've got the education, and then find a place that's actually supportive. So adding in things that are actually going to be useful on the way. If it's a small decision that's been thought on and procrastinated on, always do the new thing. If I'm worried, oh, should I go to this shopping center or that shopping center? Should I use this shampoo or that shampoo? Try the new one, because then with more knowledge, you can make a better decision. So I would say, if it's a really important thing, think it through. And the other thing people can do is reach out to me in the Self Mastery and Transformation group on Facebook. That's completely free. I share information on there every week. So people are welcome to come in there, ask questions, and essentially gain more awareness. If we don't know what's holding us back, well, it's useful to find someone that can help to bring that out. It's a bit
Yeah,
like with the
yeah.
food habits. I don't know why I eat bread for comfort every day, yet I feel like crap. Oh, she had the relief. It's because when I was a little girl, I was eating bread and my parents left me all alone in the bakery. So it was my comfort. But over time, it became something that wasn't working very well. And just a bit of extra realization can help us go, I don't need that anymore. Now that I understand it a bit better.
Yeah, and what's nice is that you give people free consultations. We're gonna link to Inspire Hypnotherapy. We'll link to the Facebook group. So at least they can get the beginnings of seeing what typically is going on. I mean, do you ever do? You mentioned four sessions a lot. Does anybody ever just need one session with you? I mean, how does it typically play out?
Anywhere between 1 and 4 sessions. Many people do get one result, one session result example for quit smoking hypnosis. However, my program also has that lifetime guarantee. So if any backup support is needed for whatever reason, unlimited sessions until the person's totally happy. I don't want someone coming and going, oh, well, I'm not totally feeling confident. I had the one session. We keep working until they go, yep, I'm feeling 100%.
That's great. Great stuff going on here. Yes, I mean, a potpourri of different healing modalities. And yeah, you do weight loss, quit smoking, anxiety, panic attacks, alcohol reduction. My gosh. I mean, is there anything that hasn't crossed your desk yet at this point? You've been doing this since 2009. I can't imagine.
Well, there's the main things I focus on. Some people do sometimes come in with things I don't work on, so I refer them on. But I wanted to work on those specific things, mastering the mind, helping to balance and heal those emotions, habits and addictions, and all of that changing where it's just like, oh, I don't even have to think or worry about that thing anymore. If someone doesn't get that result, I'd say they haven't been served. So that's the value I want to bring is, oh, wow, that, I'm actually just feeling so much better. One gentleman, for example, who was having the ice cream every evening after dinner for a couple of years, he said, oh, the thought popped in to have ice cream, and then his body did this. It bobbed up and down a little bit. He didn't get up. Thought popped in, thought popped out, rather than I have to act on these addictive thoughts to get to that place of, oh, even if the thought pops in, who cares? I've got better things to do now. And again, that's the goal we work towards. It's not always easy. There's work that has to be done, and that's what I love doing the most.
Yeah. Jeremy Walker of Inspire Hypnotherapy. Before you go, tell me this. Are there any good addictions?
Well, I probably wouldn't label them addictions then. They could be called passions. If someone says they love running, and they feel good afterwards, generally. You can be a bit sore, that's fine, but you know, emotionally you feel well after it. We'd say good habit, good passion. If, again, it's eating sugar, sex, porn, whatever it is, and you go, oh, I feel awful afterwards, I feel guilty, we'd say they're addictions and ones to clear out. So if you feel kind of up and energized after something, keep it. If afterwards you feel down or depressed, they're probably the ones to heal and work on.
Yes. Well, very happy that you are out there getting the results you're doing, continuing the work with people, and again, inspiring people to believe that change is possible. Yeah, Jeremy, thanks so much for coming on the show. This has been a very, very interesting dialogue. I appreciate the perspective of somebody who is out there working in the field. It's always, always great to hear.
Thank you very much, Greg, and I appreciate your work.
Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy Walker, thanks so much for coming on the show. I want to thank Ronnie McGilvray for the theme music. I want to thank Zero Boy for the pre-theme music. I want to thank you. I always do. But I don't feel like gratitude is enough. Do you have a 3-cent Patreon I can contribute to every month? And if you do, can you give me a free coupon code? I'll write great comments, I promise. All right, everybody. So great to have you on today. We'll talk soon.